Blog Talk Radio.
Is this the first time that D'Angelo Russell tried to sneak weed on a plane? Like, that's a serious question. I know that a lot of people don't think that it's, you know, funny when you talk about trying to sneak things on a plane and airport security. You know, that's at an all-time high. Like, we're real sensitive about this sort of thing. But I'm wondering if this is the first time D'Angelo Russell ever tried to sneak weed on a plane. Because the story goes that he put less than 2 grams of marijuana inside, allegedly now, inside of an Arizona tea can. Less than 2 grams of marijuana inside of an Arizona tea can. And he got busted at the LaGuardia Airport. And I'm just trying to figure it out. Like, what about this setup did he think was either smart or sneaky or could work? Like, the Arizona tea can, kind of a dead giveaway. Kind of a dead giveaway, right? I mean, it's noted here, it wasn't even on his carry, it was on his checked luggage. He probably could have gotten away with that with the carry-on if he had put that in the carry-on, right? Just throw that thing above his head and make it work. But it seems like maybe D'Angelo Russell at the age of, what is he now, 23? Is D'Angelo Russell 23 yet? At the age of 23 years old, it looks like D'Angelo Russell may have tried to sneak weed on a plane for the very first time in his life. I saw someone make a funny joke asking whether we know that Swaggy P wasn't the one that tipped off TSA. I think that's a valid question, given their history. Given the history, given the snitching background of D'Angelo Russell versus Swaggy P, how do we know that Swaggy P doesn't have some kind of connection that is guardian? Knew about D'Angelo's plan, or knew, maybe he knew about his tendency. What if it's that? What if D'Angelo Russell's been doing this, right? And it has gone undetected. And this was the one little piece of dirt that Swaggy P had on D'Angelo Russell. That would make it a much more interesting story than NBA player gets cited for having a small amount of marijuana in his checked luggage. Far more interesting. I mean, it's like a $100 citation. He ain't going to jail. They say he was still able to make his flight to Louisville. He still made the flight. Like, this was a non-event. And anyone who tries to make it seem more serious than it is, and to be clear, because I don't want to make a straw man argument here, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing anyone making character judgments or character assassination on D'Angelo Russell for having weed on the airplane. I'm not seeing that. But I do wonder, or at the very least, it's just worth considering, what if Swaggy P had something to do with this? But this means D'Angelo Russell doesn't have, like, does he not have weed-smoking friends? Like, say he's new to the game. You would think that he would perhaps ask some of his stoner friends, hey, how do you get your weed on the plane, especially the smaller amounts? How do you get your weed on the plane? I'm going to Louisville, Kentucky. Not necessarily the most, I don't understand that to be one of the more weed-friendly places in America. It's not exactly Denver, Portland, you know. I'm going to Louisville, Kentucky. How do I sneak this weed on the plane? Because I'm not going to be able to find it when I get there, right? I'm assuming that was his logic, or that was his thought process. Does he not have stoner friends to ask about this? Let me tell you what one of my cousins used to do. And this is no joke. And I remember this. I might have been early teens. Cousin came to visit from one of those weed-friendly states. This was before it was legal anywhere, obviously. But it was already one of those weed-friendly states, West Coast. Flew down to Houston with his weed. Guess where he put it? Anybody want to guess where he put it? Anyone? If you want to guess where he put it, call the number 714-583-6850. Apparently, he put the weed in some aluminum foil. Put the aluminum foil into the tissue paper. Put the tissue paper up his butt. Up his butt. Now, that's some dedication, a level of dedication that I don't fully understand. Something that I couldn't get behind. No pun intended. But that's what my cousin did. And he is a stoner vet, a veteran stoner. And this has worked for him for years. I think pre and post TSA, this has been his strategy. Get just enough weed to put in some aluminum foil. And obviously, you don't want the aluminum foil rubbing up on your booty, particularly your booty hole. And so to cushion it a little bit, put tissue paper on there. So hopefully D'Angelo Russell catches wind of this, or maybe his stoner friends let him know, hey, next time, if you don't want to get cited for having weed on the plane, if you don't want your name out there for a silly headline like this, especially as you're a restricted free agent and about to get paid. And to be clear, my man's still about to get paid because he is cold. I mean, he had a breakout year this year. Everybody already knew he was good. Number two pick for the Lakers several years ago. Everyone knew he could play. It just had to come together for him. He was a young dude. Seems to be coming together, though, on the court. And off the court, he just needs more people. He needs to talk to somebody. He needs a consultant, a weed-carrying consultant, because this ain't it. The Arizona Tecan ain't it. Anyway, we got the NBA playoffs right now, man. And is anybody else just confused, just like unsure of what to do with these conference semifinals? Like, this is what we were waiting on. We had to get some of those teams that we weren't interested in out of here. Like, with all due respect to Indiana and what they did after the Oladipo injury, and we did respect what they did after the Oladipo injury, they were wasting our time. They were wasting our time in these playoffs. Orlando was wasting our time. Strong team, really good team, actually, but wasting our time in the grand scheme of things. They were just on the outside of those four teams that we really expected to be good. And, of course, Indiana was there, but they don't have Oladipo. Detroit, wasting our time, complete waste of our time. Utah Jazz put up a strong effort against the Rockets, but ultimately a waste of our time. We had several of those. So this is what we wanted. We wanted the top four teams in each conference to face off because we felt like, well, that was actually worth watching, particularly in the East. And I think that's where most of the confusion is, right? Like, we've, for all year, at least ever since, what, Philly made the Jimmy Butler trade early in the year towards the deadline. They got Tobias Harris, and we decided that that was possibly the best starting five in the NBA, the best starting five that we've seen since, well, the last elite starting five that J.J. Redick was a part of in Lob City, right? These were four juggernauts, or depending on how you look at least just by default, the four best teams in the Eastern Conference, depending on how strongly you view the Eastern Conference. But we don't know. Like, I feel like at least two games into each series, right? And just to pull it up, like, we're three games into the Philly Raptors series at the time of this recording, and at least two games into all of the series, I don't feel like we really know what to do with any of these series. I certainly don't. Like, the only team that's up 2-0 or to take a 2-0 lead and the first team to win two games in the series was the Warriors going up 2-0 against the Rockets. And does anybody feel, like, confident and for sure that the Warriors are going to win this series? Like, we are all I feel like picking the Warriors not only to win this series against the Rockets, but to win the NBA Finals. Many of us have said that this series is the NBA Finals. I've heard at least two people say that, which is, I think, a fair assessment when you look around. Like, I firmly believe that the Warriors and the Rockets are the two best teams in the NBA. Certainly a case could be made, though, for those top four teams in the East. But when you look at it, Celtics-Bucks tied 1-1. At the time of this recording. Anybody know what to do with that? Like, it seems like that first game, we were shocked, right? We didn't think that the Celtics could come out and dominate Milwaukee like that, especially considering that Milwaukee had been not just the best team in the East, but seemed like the best team in basketball all year. And what did we see? Like, I remember right before the game started, I thought, you know, they're going to put Al Horford on Giannis, and Giannis is really going to have his coming out party in the playoffs against Al Horford. Wrong. Completely wrong. Giannis had Al Horford's forearm in his chest, in his hip, and seemed to not know what to do with the grown man's strength. Al Horford ball, absolutely. And what we've seen from the rest of these guys, like Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, I mean, and then Marcus Morris in game two, they've been pretty good. They've been better than I think we gave them credit for, because we had all of those chemistry issues or chemistry questions, I should say, with Boston. Same was the case with Philly, right? And there don't seem to be any chemistry problems whatsoever. Like, you can point to some of the things that they aren't doing well, but they wouldn't be related to chemistry or how well they fit together, right? So this is my thing right now. Like, I normally, two games in, you feel, even if it's 1-1, which most of these series are, you feel stronger or more strongly about a particular team. I don't feel that way in these series. Like, Boston looked great in that first game. Shocked the hell out of me. I did not see it coming. I know at least one guy who was picking them, or several people who were picking Milwaukee to win in 4 or 5. I didn't see that. I thought it would be at least a 6 or 7 game series, at least a 6 game series, probably a 7 game series. That's what we could be looking at here. But Boston, as good as Boston looked in game one, we had to figure that Milwaukee would respond and be strong in game two, and that's exactly what happened. And so we have an evenly matched series so far. One game where Boston looks great, one game where Milwaukee looks great, and you see what the adjustment is in game three when they go back to Boston. But I'm still where I was before the playoffs started with those top four teams. Don't know what to do with them. I can tell you who I'm least confident in. That's Toronto. Least confident in your NBA TV All-Stars. And to be fair, they haven't been NBA TV All-Stars this year because they have a legitimate star. They have a legitimate superstar leading the way. And Kawhi Leonard was brilliant on Thursday night. He was brilliant. He was actually the only bright spot for Toronto in that entire game when you consider what else they're expecting from other guys. Like Siakam, don't feel like he had a bad game, but he had that little moment where he tried to trip his buddy Joel Embiid. Again, that seemed to just be indicative of what the Raptors were doing that night, raptoring. What was the tweet? I retweeted someone who said Raptors, they did all of that to finally win a game one. They did all that to finally win a game one, and then the Raptors just raptor. They're out there raptoring. Someone says the Raptors continue to be the Chargers of the NBA. I mean, these are all fair critiques. fair slugs. The Raptors are continuing to raptor, and I don't trust them at all. So perhaps that is the team. Perhaps that is the thing that we can't trust out of the four. Philly looks good, even in defeat last night. Not last night, but in game one. Philly looks good. Philly looks like they put that thing together. We talked about the best start in five. That is looking and proving to be true. Joel Embiid, healthy or not, is a tough cover. Like, I don't know what to do with this guy. He's big, he's strong, he can shoot, rebounds. Like, I don't know. They thought that Marc Gasol was going to be the answer to the Joel Embiid problem. Incorrect. Joel Embiid might be hurt. He might be a little slow and perhaps not in his best shape because of injury or something like that. But Marc Gasol, he made Marc Gasol just look like an old man yesterday. It made him look like an old man. And like he's clearly outmatched and is clearly the better player. So, yeah, outside of Kawhi Leonard, who folks are making stylistic comparisons to Jordan that are actually fair. Like he's mastered the mid-range game and the fadeaway jump shots and those hands, right? It's the big hands that do it that allow him to control the ball in such a powerful way. Kind of like Jordan used to do. Doesn't have the personality, doesn't have the flair, not even as good, right? We're not saying that. But stylistically, you can see it. Like, just divorce yourself from one having a completely bald head and the other one having cornrows. And stylistically, you can see it. But you had him. You had Pascal Siakam hitting some shots, or at least, you know, doing some good work in transition. You had, and he's another guy who created his own shot too, right? He's, other than Kawhi on the team, you've got Siakam. You had Danny Green hit a couple threes. But this is still your typical playoff Kyle Lowry. Am I wrong about that? It seems like we're still getting the old Kyle Lowry when it's time for the playoffs. Kyle Lowry's numbers in game three. 2 of 10 from the field. 2 of 10. Now, to be fair, that is the third most shot attempts, field goal attempts, I should say, on the team that night, which is what it should be. Kawhi should be taking most of the shots. Siakam right after that. And then I'd like to see Kyle take maybe 12 to 14. I mean, if he's going to make them, right? I'd like to see him take 12 to 14 shots in a game. He took 10, made 2 of them. 0 for 4 from 3. Missed a couple of free throws. So that's 20% from the floor, 2 of 10. And his team, my goodness, was a pitiful minus 28 with him on the floor. That's not going to get it done. I'm pretty sure that Toronto felt like they could get rid of DeMar DeRozan and substitute him with Kawhi Leonard, and that would remedy the playoff performance issues. Since Kawhi has proven himself in the playoffs, a former NBA Finals MVP coming from San Antonio, where all they do is perform in the playoffs. That last game that eliminated them, notwithstanding, where they forgot to foul. Point I'm making is, aside from that. But I'm pretty sure that they thought that they could just swap the two, and there you go. Little did they know they needed to get rid of both of them, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, because it's just not happening. It's just not happening, and I'm reluctant to not criticize, but to question Lowry's competence, because we know he's a good player. I mean, I even remember him when he was with the Rockets and just couldn't get along with Kevin McHale. I remember him being a solid player, and he's still that. Like, Kyle Lowry is a damn good basketball player. I do not have the explanation for why he comes up small in the playoffs. Like, I simply do not. But I think what the Raptors are learning is that they just got to get rid of everything that was about that old team, about that underachieving squad that could not perform in the playoffs. Because here we are with Kyle Lowry having a better star to play behind and a much improved Pascal Siakam, where he is now, he goes from 1A, kind of the second best player, but the heart and soul of the team, to really being the third best player on the team, whether he's the heart and soul or not. And it is like it's taking no pressure off of him. He is still the same dude. So that's the only team in the East that I don't trust. Like I'm looking at Philly and I'm like, man, they could, all of a sudden, they look like they could actually compete, not just go to the finals, but actually compete with likely the Warriors, but whoever makes it out of the West. Like, I'm not thinking that Philly's getting run over. I don't see it. But that's, of course, if they make it through, man. And that Boston-Milwaukee series, quietly the most compelling one so far. Quietly the most compelling series of them all so far. Like, again, just to hit back on it, Al Horford's value, like, I know he got a big contract, or that he gets paid a lot of money, and he's been around. Well, how long is that? Al Horford has been in the league since what, 2004? Let me look this up while I have y'all. Al Horford. He's been in the league since 2004? Okay, no, that's wrong. That's right. He was on those he was on those Florida teams. Okay, so since 2007. Since 2007, not as long as I thought. Forgot for a second that he was on those Billy Donovan teams with Noah, Corey Brewer, all those guys. But, yeah, that's still a pretty long time. He's 32 now. Still strong. Still a skilled basketball player. Still makes you wonder, what if he didn't waste so much of his career in Atlanta? Still that guy, man. And so I wasn't expecting that. Like, I was if you've watched Giannis throughout the year, he seems like an impossible cover. Like, the only guy that can stop Giannis is himself. If he, like, just has an off night. And obviously he doesn't shoot from the outside very well. So there is that. You figure Giannis would be more of the one to stop himself than an actual, another human being able to do it. But he did it, man. Now, again, Giannis responded. The Bucks responded. They think they're going to get Brogdon back. I haven't seen any reports on that yet, but I know that previously the thought was that he would be back at some point in this series. But, yeah, man, I mean, these are the two teams that seem to be having the most competitive back and forth, Boston and Milwaukee. I say that as if the Warriors and the Rockets are not playing. But that's because we all expected that, right? Like no one was picking one or the other to sweep or to win in five, right? So you could argue that perhaps is the most shocking, that it is 2-0 Warriors. You could argue that is the most shocking result, even though when you look at it, that series feels a lot closer than 2-0. It feels like the Rockets have hung in there, lost by four in the first game. The second game didn't really feel as competitive as the first. It felt far less competitive. But, and that was, you know, of course, that's the game where James Harden, this is after all of the complaints, the embarrassing complaints about the refs, stop whining and complaining about the refs. But what happens? James Harden gets poked in the eye. Of course. He gets poked in the eye. And when I saw it, I didn't really believe that there was much there, but getting poked in the eye can be really subtle, but very painful. And when he came back out, his eye was red, completely red, and it's still red, bleeding and everything. He was able to have an okay game despite that. Like, he was able to hit some big shots at the end, despite not being able to really see. And that's a closer series than it looks. Now, obviously, Saturday night, or I'm not sure what time that game is, but on Saturday when they play, they got to win. Like, they can't go down 3-0. 3-1 is one thing. 3-0 is a totally different one. They can't go down 3-0 against the Warriors. Can't happen. Yeah, Saturday night. So it is a must-win. It is a must-win for the Rockets. But I don't think any of us feel like that's going to be out of the question. You know, we've, for the most part, this looks like it has the potential to have a back and forth, like we expected. So, yeah. The total numbers of the series, I should say, what am I saying? The 2-0 lead that the Warriors hold is not indicative of how dominant they've been in the series, was the sentence that I was trying to say. That is not clear just based off of the result. And so, yeah, man, I want to see once they get home, what are the Rockets going to do with Clint Capela? Do we cut his minutes? Rockets fan talking here. Do we cut it? And that's why I insert we. Do we cut his minutes? Because he's just a bad matchup, it seems like. It seems like he's just a bad matchup with the Warriors. Now, we thought with Boogie out, because that was the bad matchup in the regular season, right? Like, Boogie cooked them in the regular season. Not the worst thing in the world. Boogie's a hell of a player. But with no Boogie Cousins out there, Capela still seems like he's just lost, like he's a man without a country. A man without a country out there, man. What were the numbers that I read on Capela earlier? Like, it's bad. Through two games, in the 60 minutes with Capela on the floor, the Rockets have a net rating of -31.3. When he sits, which is half the time, in the 36 minutes when Capela sits, the Rockets have a net rating of +29.5. I mean, that is hard to ignore. That's hard to ignore and say that, hey, man, our third best player is hurting us. We are suffering because of our third best player, and he might not be playable in this series. Now, it still looks odd when they go small. P.J. Tucker out there playing the five, like, is that sustainable? I honestly don't know. I do not know the answer to that question. It is one of the reasons why I'm glad I don't coach the team. Because I would lose my mind over the last few days trying to decide what to do with Clint Capela's minutes. Wouldn't know what to do. But he does seem to be hurting the team. That does seem to be the case, which I hate for him because he was the one who unfortunately put it out there that he wants the Warriors. Though he seems to be the only player of consequence who ain't ready for the matchup. Look, I know I didn't talk much about Portland Nuggets, but that's because, just to be honest with you, I tried to watch both of those first two games, and I fell asleep on them. So I don't have that much of an informed opinion on them, man. But we'll see.